Hey everyone, this is Mark Bonner and you're listening to Under the Abbey Stand, brought to you in partnership with Shout. Shout is a free, confidential, 24/7 text messaging support service for anyone struggling to cope. If life ever feels like it's getting too much, you can anonymously text 85258 anytime, day or night, and speak to a trained volunteer for mental health support. Enjoy the pod.
No one said it was going to be easy, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Under the Abbey Stand. I'm your host, Julian Roberts. And alongside Tom Walker and Matt Caspell, we've been given the unenviable task of picking apart Saturday's 6-0 defeat at Hillsborough. What an audio treat you're all in for here. Firstly, Matt Caspell, I'm going to go straight in with a question we've received from one of our faithful listeners. This is from friend of the pod, Tom Dobbin. Are the recent appearances of Matt Caspell on the pod and the club's downturn in form linked at all? How do you respond to those allegations?
Oh, friend of the pod, indeed.
Friend in inverted commas, is that what you're saying?
Friend, acquaintance of the pod, rare guest. I've tried to work it out really quickly. I think our points per game average this season pre-Caspell was 1.27 and our post-Caspell was 1.22. So Maybe the facts don't lie. Maybe a marginal dip, but we did beat Newcastle in amongst that as well. So I'm gonna I've had no impact on that, but I'll claim it anyway here.
Yeah, well, you're being harsh on yourself there. I can imagine that in the preview for next week's game, Mark Bonner comes out in his press conference and says, "Well, listen, since Matt Caspell, there's been this downturn in form. I don't know what you want me to do about it."
I do like to think that all of the club's history will be expressed that way, actually, yeah.
Yeah, from now on.
That sounds like a really good way of benchmarking time, for sure.
It's just Marcus on the pod. And secondly, let's have a hello from Tom Walker. How are you feeling, mate, after yesterday?
Yeah, delightful. Really delightful.
Clear-headed, fresh, ready to attack another podcast.
Yeah, and also very happy because the football was really good to watch.
I'd love to know what the points per game has been on the weeks of the pod that you've not been on the pod, because you've been on pretty much every week. So I can imagine if we win one, the points per game that you're not on it is probably like 3.
Yeah, I mean, like, to be honest, I've done calculations we will come on to at some point in this pod. and that was more than enough for one lifetime, basically. So I'll leave it to someone else to work out. Maybe Caspell can have a go at it. He's done the ones with him, so maybe we can add a note onto that.
This week's Under the Abbey Stand's like being on like The Beautiful Mind or something. It's unbelievable, you two. Brilliant. Anyway, let's get on to more numbers. Before we get into talking about yesterday in a bit of detail, I set you both a pretty harsh bit of homework here to dredge up your worst ever hammerings you've seen at Cambridge United games. Let's start with you, Caspell. What have you come up with?
I am going to go back to 2006, December. I don't know if you lads remember this one. It's not a league game, so maybe that makes it okay. But you might remember Histon absolutely did us over at their place. The first time that we had played them, I think 43 years, the first competitive meeting. And they absolutely did us over. It was bloody horrible. It was cold. It was just a bleak, bleak day. Not to make anyone too depressed.
No, what we're doing here is we're starting the pod as on the bleakest possible note, and then it's only got one way to go after that. Tom, have you got anything that can beat that 5-0 at Histon?
I'm gonna pick the obvious one, I think, which is Luton 7, Cambridge 0. That was pretty horrible. Although the only thing that I've really got to caveat with is that they were a very good team at that level and did get promoted. So it's not, and they did also do that to like 3 or 4 teams that season. So it's not necessarily like humiliation like the Histon one was. If I'm looking for that, I'd maybe look at when Alfreton did us 6-3 in the FA Trophy.
Good one.
File under bleak, depressing conference evening where you thought the club was going to basically just cease to exist and no one would really care about it. But yeah, there have been a few, I think.
There's a couple. Go on, Caspell.
I was going to say, I think, Tom, the rich comedy you're missing out on there, and not to reopen the Are You a Real Fan or Not Debate, but Do you remember when the team sheet came out before that Luton 7-0? And we were both in the pub and you turned to me and you said, like, just lump on, like, what on earth are we looking at here? I feel like it was something like Alito was on his own up front or something. It was just completely incomprehensible, not at all clear who was, like, no clue. And we both did lump on, and at least that softened the blow a bit. I think the only other good thing about Luton is waiting to the end of the game, knowing that all the managerial staff or the coach had to walk across the pitch because the way their pitch is laid out. So you at least knew there was, like, something to look forward to at the full time, which is you could give them an absolute barrel of abuse. So
yeah, there's nothing like a bit of abuse to top off a 7-0 hammering, is there?
So, yeah.
Also, that game's got the brilliant fact of is it Lee scoring from a different postcode, which is just a cherry on top of the cake, isn't it? I've got another pretty bleak one that I was at with both of you, which is MK Dons 6, Cambridge United 0 on New Year's Day, 3-0 down after 12 minutes. It's, that was not ideal. But listen, we've got a fresh one to add to that, which is yesterday's trip to Hillsborough. I mean, I think we'll come on to this, but I don't think we will be filing them quite under the worst ever hammerings in the same sort of conversation that we've talked about those other games. But yesterday, where do we start? Here's a question from Richard for you, Caspel. Have we ever been so thoroughly outplayed? And let me put a little asterisk on that and go, under Mark Bonner, have we ever been so thoroughly outplayed?
Yeah, I mean, I think if it's under Bonner, that makes it really that's really easy. I would say no, we have not been that thoroughly outplayed by anybody else. It's like we were playing the Harlem Globetrotters in the first half, to be honest. It was like
Harry Bannon and the Harlem Globetrotters.
That's it. It's like every single time they got the ball, I was like, oh, this is looking pretty intimidating. They possess a huge amount of quality, Sheffield Wednesday. I was surprised. I went through the message board this morning and I was surprised at the level of just all out kind of aggression from our fan base on that forum, particularly towards the players and the team. Like, obviously not at all a good performance. Bonner did a really good job, I think, being sort of realistic in his assessment after the game. He didn't really try and sugarcoat it, accepted it just wasn't really where we needed to be. But I do think sometimes you just have to give credit to your opposition as well. So we made life incredibly difficult for ourselves with the way we started the game. We obviously sat too deep. Don't think we really got stuck into them at all. I think a few people have pointed out no yellow cards for us, which for me, if you're going to get on, if you're on the receiving end of that kind of scoreline, it sounds a bit old school, it's a bit Neanderthal, but at least do something different. Like, at least try and get stuck into them a bit. And we were just chasing shadows. So I do think Sheffield Wednesday were very, very, very good yesterday. Probably the best they've played all season based on what their fans are saying. Probably the worst we played all season as well. Obviously, there's a bit of a cause and effect. But we just move on. You know, it's just one of those things. Just need to see a response next time out is probably the most important thing. And probably the most important part of our entire running is what we do next time out.
It's probably was one of those afternoons. It's just a bit of a perfect storm, wasn't it? It's just one of them where if you go on Twitter and look at any sort of Wednesday channel, they're pretty much all saying it's as well as they've played all season. As you say, obviously not helped by us. Tom, let's stick with negatives for a second. They are obviously a very good side, and they have, for my money, the best player in the division in Barry Bannon. Do you think we just simply didn't deal with him properly from the off? I mean, you look at that second goal, how much time he had. I mean, it's obviously a brilliant finish, but it's indicative to give a player like that much time on the ball in the middle of the park, isn't it?
Yeah, I think generally speaking, there's probably three things that sort of determine the result of a football match. And one of those is the opposition that you play, which, you know, Casper's obviously talked about in terms of their quality. You've got the sort of tactical side of the game, which I'm sure we'll come on to talk about. They obviously set up with wing backs, which is probably the problems all season. And the other one is about how you perform individually, and we kind of lost key battles all over the pitch. The centre backs weren't able to deal with the two forwards. Berahino obviously got a hat trick, but the key one was obviously Bannon. He ran the game, and look, we're not the first team to go to Hillsborough and get a slap in this season. You know, I'm sure it will happen to many other teams probably in the next few weeks. They're clearly a team at this level who are, you know, miles above what you would expect to face. And Bannon is probably the key example of that, I think. The goal that he scored was obviously a good finish and you know, symptomatic of a player of that ability. But in regards to the way that he was picked up or not picked up, like, it's just simply not good enough. You know, you want to make players like that work for that sort of opportunity to score. And we didn't, I felt. And it was like last season, you know, for us, you know, you look at Houlihan, who was obviously, you know, probably the best player in League Two last season in terms of ability. And there were games where, like, I think it's like Crawley at home and Harrogate at home, where like teams just kind of let him do what he wanted with the ball, and that won the fixture on its own. So when you let a player like Bannon do that, and you have the other factors like the strikers winning the battles with our centre halves and us not being able to lay a glove on them going forward, scorelines like that can happen. So yeah, frustrating one and obviously thoroughly disappointing, but it's just one to learn from and to move on from, I think.
Something I found incredibly frustrating yesterday was what we were very good at under Bonner is just staying in games for periods of time. It's when we're playing like big teams, in inverted commas. Let's say we go down one goal after what, 6 minutes or whatever it was, an unfortunate goal. I have to say, I haven't watched highlights back because I haven't been able to put myself through it. So stop me if I'm sort of misremembering something. But at that point, it's like, well, okay, keep it 1-0. Just keep yourself in this game for as long as you can, because you're putting the pressure back on, you know, the better side in inverted commas, or the team that are expected to go and win the game. And then to just give, like you said, Tom, Barry Bannon the ball in the middle of the park like that, I found incredibly frustrating. Let's switch over to some positives. It's only one of a few times this has happened this season, 37 games in. You look at Lincoln at home, it was a 5-1. We were sort of weirdly in that game though in the second half. I thought we were playing a bit of football in the second half. Not that we ever looked like properly getting back into it, if you see what I mean. And you could probably say the same about MK. There was a marked improvement there. Is it impressive enough, Caspel, that like it's taken this long and against a side as good as Wednesday, it was today that it fell? You know, I'm thinking of, if you're a Cheltenham fan, the night we beat them 5-0, you'd be a lot more worried than losing 6-0 at Hillsborough.
Yeah, and it's funny you mentioned that. I was going to talk about that one as well, because I feel like what Sheffield Wednesday did to us is what we did to Cheltenham. And I think we have to just put it all in perspective and say, look, whether or not we stay in League One, I feel pretty confident we will. It was never going to be decided on what we went and did at Hillsborough.
Yeah.
But going away to someone like Cheltenham and winning so convincingly and playing such attacking sort of football with such flair, that's who we need to be beating. So if you can go away to places like that, and we've got Wimbledon in a few weeks, another really big game, go there and get either just your point or go and get a win. And we'll, the Hillsborough thing will be a distant memory, to be honest. So yeah, I think just it's all about just keeping level headed now and just see what we can do next Saturday against MK.
And in general, it's just like you say, not being overly negative. Obviously, it was a disappointing afternoon. You're not going to lose 6-0 and be like over the moon pie, but like looking at the bigger picture. Tom, a question that we've had a lot on Twitter, and thanks again for sending in all your question, is this difference between our home and our away form? So now our home form reads 1-7, drawn 7, lost 4. And our away form reads 1-5, drawn 5. 1-4, drawn 5, lost 10, which is actually 14th in the league for away form. It's not quite as bad as I'd anticipated. From CUHD and Omulo, they both asked, why is our home form impeccable but our away form's dire? Maybe that's a little bit of an exaggeration, but what do you think is the difference there between our home and our away form, Tom?
I think a couple of people picked up on it in questions that were asked as well. I think it's got a lot to do with the pitch. I think we're very comfortable playing our way and playing the system that we play and the sort of setup and approach to games on a narrower pitch. Whereas teams, particularly the ones at the top end of the league who have sort of loftier ambitions and you know, maybe more quality in sort of attacking areas of the pitch, they obviously like to be expansive and therefore their pitches are a little bit wider. That's something that we're struggling with a lot. I think, like you say, like it's not been really catastrophic away from home, but there is a noticeable drop off. We're not winning as many games, picking up as many points, scoring as many goals, etc. So yeah, I think the pitch has a really big thing to do with it. And I think that's the rest of the reason, I think, to be honest, is less about where the game is played and more about the sort of system and setup that we're using. Yeah, I'm sure we'll come on to talk about the wing back formation and how that's kind of impacted us. But I think that's one thing. I mean, just to kind of move on to that a little bit, if you don't mind.
Go on. He wants to get his calculations out here.
Yeah.
Go on.
Here we go.
Slap it on the table.
Here
mate.
We go.
Here we go.
Yeah. So we've speculated all season that this is, that we struggle against teams with three at the back or five at the back, however you want to sort of interpret it. So I got on the internet and did a bit of homework, and I've come up with a calculation which sort of legitimizes our speculation. We have played this season 26 games against teams. We play four at the back, and the rest of the games have been played against teams with three at the back. So, we played more games against teams with three at the back and less with four at the back. So, first of all, it's more common that we're playing against these teams. And the difference in points per game is quite stark. Do you want to guess how many we get against?
So how many points per game we get against three at the back?
Three at the back.
I don't know. 1.2.
0.8.
Yeah, I'm not shocked by that. There must be something though. It's the bigger teams who are more likely to play three at the back, or is that?
It's a range. Yeah. To be honest, like Gillingham played it, Shrewsbury played it, Wickham played it.
Doncaster played it, I think, didn't they?
Yeah, so like it really is kind of spread across the division. I think Burton played it as well, actually. I guess it's put into even more stark contrast when our points per game against teams who play four at the back is 1.6. So we're literally picking up twice as many points per game with teams who play four at the back as three at the back. I think it was last week's pod, I think it was Jordan made the point that there's like 18 teams in this league that play three at the back. Like if that's a system that we like categorically can't deal with, that's going to prove a problem moving forward. That's got to be the priority for Mark Bonner to look at, and you know, the rest of the coaching staff to think, how can we counteract this? Because what we're doing at the moment just simply isn't working. We're getting taken to pieces by teams who, frankly, Sheffield Wednesday are, you know, obviously a separate example because the quality they've got access to. But like Wickham took us apart. I get they're a team who maybe would expect to beat us, but then you look at like Gillingham are beating us twice playing with three at the back. Like this is a systemic problem that is going to cost us points moving forward. It's fortunate that it's happening now, when we're sat, 12 points above the relegation zone and not sort of right in the middle of a dogfight. I think realistically we're going to be safe this season, but like this is something that does need looking at. We kind of thought that it was a problem last season a little bit, but not too many teams played with three at the back, and you know, we sort of got through it because of the quality that we had at that level, but we can't get away with it this season. We can't get away with just like consistently not being able to deal with one very common setup. That's quite a big problem.
Yeah, because it's not as niche. I mean, it's sort of quite surprising, you know, the third tier of English football, there's like 3/4 of the teams are playing with a system like that, right? It's there's that sort of tradition list that the lower down you go, there's going to be a high percentage of teams playing four at the back, but that's probably, you know, a myth now. Do you think then, Tom, that's the same reason why we struggle on wide pitches? Like, do you think it's rather than the pitch itself, it's sort of that factor alongside them playing three at the back and using the full extent of those pitches?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it just allows the wing backs to really get us a bit more, doesn't it? It gives them more space, more opportunity to use that space, and that's clearly a problem. It's probably, to be honest, my calculations didn't quite extend into how many points per game we get against three at the back at home versus away. Maybe I'll leave that for another pod. But
awful preparation.
I suspect that probably we've done better against teams playing three at the back at home because of a narrower pitch than away. That is pure speculation. I'm going to leave that to someone else to do. But I think that's a key reason. Yeah.
Yeah. Casper, there's something we were just discussing just before we started, which is we more and more are becoming the sort of using the Accrington blueprint is what I'm going to call it for being a successful football team, which is if you look at Accrington's home form, it's I think top six. And if you look at their away form, it's bottom four. And they use their home form to sort of predicate any sort of success for their whole season. Do you think, I mean, do you agree with that? Do you think that's something that they might have actually like planned for, in a sense that, you know, we've obviously got this narrow pitch. It's something we spoke about last week, that actually that was something that we planned for. And B, is that a good thing?
Yeah, it's an interesting one, isn't it? They're not a bad club for us to model ourselves on, because they've been very successful at this level for a number of years now on limited resources. And when I say limited resources, that's just in the context of what else is going on in League One. So if Barry Bannon's on 10K a week, you know, we've got some serious stuff to contend with that's a little bit out of our control. I guess it gets a bit philosophical at this point. So what we were talking about before the pod was, if this is a model, like if this is something we're actively choosing to do, and I would say it probably isn't, because no one is actively seeking to have better home form than away form. Mm-hmm. I think you just want to win all the games that you can. And we have more control of the conditions at home. So we decided to make the pitch narrower. I think it's really worked in our favour. Compare the two performances against Sheffield Wednesday, home and away. And it was night and day, basically. So I don't think it's necessarily the worst thing to model yourself on, but I will, same thing I said before when the pod started, I would find it a bit depressing if it turns out we don't try and find a way to play on these wider pitches against these wing-backs. That means that when we go to places like Sunderland, Sheffield Wednesday, Ipswich, Wigan, we're just nailed on to get beaten pretty much every single time. I think I'd find that quite hard to deal with. What I will say, and I've said this before, I said this around when Ironside was out injured, like Bonner will find a way. I just properly believe that he will, in a way, like he will find the lessons and the positives to take out of what happened on Saturday and use it as a springboard to try something a little bit different. So like, what can we do differently next time? You know, maybe someone like Lancaster gets a look now. Maybe it's not necessarily the case that Ironside is an absolute shoo-in, you know, sort of first name on the team sheet. You know, like, it's one of those things. So if we can take anything from that, my hope is that we use it as like a catalyst to try something different and try something new, basically.
Yeah, and it's always been his greatest strength, right, is bouncing back from big defeats and, as you say, finding a way. Let me ask you a question on our system. We've had multiple questions, David, Brad, Joe, just sort of on this topic. For you, Casper, do you think we have the personnel to be able to play a 3-5-2 or a 5-3-2, you know, whatever you want to call it? And do you think, when you say Bonner will find a way, do you think that's what he should be looking at, is like finding a way for us to play that sort of system to counteract these teams?
I don't know. Maybe it's maybe I don't know enough about football, something that football fans are often...
Well, that's loath. A given. That's a given.
That's something that football fans are loath to admit. But when you've got the likes of Tom Dobbin just snarling around Twitter, then that's... You know, start to get a bit of self-doubt, maybe. I don't know whether it's the right thing to do is to match up. Like, is that the sensible thing to do? Stuff that I do know is that I would have loved it. I don't think we see this so much anymore. I'd have loved it if someone had just had a man-marking assignment on Barry Bannon yesterday. And you could argue that is a piece of matching up. Like, tell whoever you think is most suitable, tell Paul Digby, just chase Bannon around the pitch and just push him over every time he even remotely is getting near the ball and just disrupt their rhythm. I think we'll find a way of doing stuff differently. I don't know whether that's that Christmas tree formation the whole fan base is clamoring for.
Especially Jordan Warland, he is listening now and he is loving that you've mentioned that.
Especially Jordan Warland. I don't know if it's that. I don't know if we match him up. I don't know if we try something different. I know that... I think I've noticed probably less this season something we did very well last season, which is that we made a lot of in-game tactical changes, particularly last season. It was really noticeable. We would really change the stuff we were doing, and often that had quite a good impact. And I am quite a big advocate of whenever you're going to set up for a football match, maybe in the very first 5 minutes of the game, deliberately do stuff quite differently to how you intend to play for the rest of the match, simply as a bit of a sort of send a team in a different direction. And that's just simple stuff like put your left winger on the right wing for the first 5 minutes of the game because opposition player has an assignment and he's maybe just slightly confused that his player is on the other side of the pitch and it's a little bit different. You just jolt people out of their comfort zone a little bit. I don't know. I mean, I'll stay with the line. I believe that Bonner and team management in general will try something different and we'll find a way. I think probably key to our long-term success in League One will be, how do we approach this? How do we solve the puzzle? I do think we miss Jack Iredale on personnel. So I think having Iredale around and fit now would make it easier for us to maybe be more experimental and try a back three. And I think the other thing we've not pointed out yet, obviously, that Bono mentioned is, I think that's 50 games now for us this season. Yeah, we have a small squad, 50 games. It was a big stage and we gave them not one, but two legs up pretty early. And I'm not surprised that the rest of the game rolled out like it did. And I don't want to sound too negative, but actually it's a bit of damage limitation. We did quite well to keep it to six, because it felt like it could have, we could have pushed towards double figures, to be honest. So I actually think we did okay in the last 30 minutes of the game to quieten things down a bit.
It was tumbling out of control at one stage, wasn't it? It's weird to come out 6-0 and go, God, do you know what? Got away with one there.
It was. I mean, I don't want to labour the point too much, but definitely under Bono in the 2 years, it's the apart from that dreadful game that we don't talk about, which we've spoken about a few weeks ago, which I'm not even going to mention or give too much air to. I'm not going to say it. It's just properly, I would call it uncomfortable viewing. It was just really grisly. Like, you know, I was saying it after the game to you, I was like, I felt really sad. It made me feel really sad and really sorry to see the players coming over, sort of heads hanging down, because the players have got so much credit in the bank. They need to realise one incredible thing they've done over the last sort of year and a half, 2 years, and what they've given to this whole fan base during a really uncertain time, really hard time through lockdown for a lot of people. I don't want the players to ever forget that and ever forget what they've achieved so far on the resources we have and with the spirit they've shown. So actually, I found it really sad to see sort of Duncan Mitov, particularly at the end, almost apologise. Yeah. I get it. And some people are obviously pretty upset. But I was also really proud of our fans and the way we kind of stuck with it towards the end as well. I think it showed there's a hell of a lot of unity, and these players have got, as I say, a huge amount of credit. So let's bounce back next Saturday, basically.
Completely agree. And I was with you, Caspel, on the tram back into town, and there was a couple of Wednesday fans that were like, your fans were so impressive in that last half an hour. Like, it's all we could hear for the last half an hour. Obviously, Tom had already left. So let's...
Turncoat.
Absolutely put you in the mud there, Tom.
The thing is, right, like, Caspel made a really good point when we were talking about the drubbings that we've had in the past, like the Luton game. Like, I stayed at that Luton game purely to give Sean Derry abuse, and clearly, that was the only reason. That was literally the only reason. I'm not necessarily proud to say that, but these are the facts. Clearly it would be ludicrous to, you know, wait half an hour to hurl abuse at a team of players who've given us the ride that we've been on over the last couple of years, and a manager like Mark Bonner, who obviously, you know, represents the football club in such a way. So I thought it was better for that reason, just to give that last half hour of this.
Because it was quite nice at the end. There was like a properly nice sort of, you know, spine tingling bit of applause. And I think if Tom had been there slating Dimi Mitov again, it would have just sort of changed the air of the occasion a little bit. but look, in all honesty, let me ask you a question, Tom, about defending. That's now 13 conceded in our last three away games. Now, granted, that's three teams who currently occupy the top seven. Here's a question from Colin. Let's go from here as a little launch point, Tom. Do you think we were better at the back without Lloyd Jones, or is there actually, you know, plenty of other factors to deal with here?
Yeah, well, I think the stats speak for themselves in that regard, I think. That's not necessarily criticism of Lloyd Jones individually, because, you know, certainly in the early parts of the season, he looked a real... really impressive addition, I think. And I think, to be honest, I think there's something to be said here, like, and it kind of links to, like, I guess some of the comments that have been made about Ironside coming straight back into the team as well, and sort of shifting Sam Smith either out of the team entirely or sort of out of position. It's just that, like, we were on a decent run of form, and we've just kind of changed, like, quite key areas of the pitch. And if I look at Lloyd Jones coming back in, I think it's less about Lloyd Jones coming back in, and the fact that I don't think on any two games since he's come, so what's he played? Wickham, Shrewsbury and obviously, which I guess was a clean sheet, but, you know, nearly wasn't. and obviously Sheffield Wednesday. I don't think his centre-back partner has been the same in any of those games. Saka can't help either. So that's kind of my take on it a little bit, I think. I mean, you know, I guess, like you said, it does kind of coincide with trips to, you know, two of the best teams in the league, which, you know, was always going to be a struggle. So it might just be, you know, a case of bad timing. There might be a little bit of lack of sharpness in there. Although he finished like Alan Shearer yesterday, didn't he?
Absolute top bins that. Wheeled away like that. Oh.
Yeah. I think it'd be harsh to like completely put this all on Lloyd Jones. Coming back into the team, which I don't, like, to be fair, I don't think is the intention of the person who asked the question, but yeah, I think he certainly found it difficult, and I think part of that is just purely the opposition that he's faced. You know, if you look at directly who his opponents were, you're talking about Sam Vokes, who was playing in the Premier League like 2 or 3 years ago, and Berahino, who, you know, was commanding like what, 8-figure transfer fees not that long ago, and was linked with moves to like Spurs. And I know that his career is not exactly gone how he might have planned at that time, but like clearly he's still a player who has, in terms of individual ability, more than probably anyone that Lloyd Jones would have come up against before. I think that's one big part of it. There's probably a bit of uncertainty in terms of, you know, the partner that he's playing with, because that has chopped and changed. I mean, it chopped and changed mid-game yesterday for him. So,
which is very like un-Bonner-like, isn't it? To hook Sherring on 55 minutes. We didn't concede when Sokodina came on, so maybe.
Yeah, maybe he was right. Maybe she was right at the start. She's not at the start.
Start like that, mate, next time, and then you won't concede six, will you?
I think it's just one of those things. I think it will naturally get a bit better once he's got back into the groove, sort of got a bit of that match sharpness and match fitness back. And yeah, hopefully, well, I hope it improves. If it doesn't, we could be in for a pretty grim end to the season, but we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, let's sort of wrap this up with a question that Liam and Jamie sent in about something Tom just mentioned there. And I'm going to ask you this, Casper, because I can't bear to see the smug look of Tom's face when this has become an actual genuine talking point now, when I ridiculed him for asking this question. After the Accrington game, I want to say, Tom asked, you know, does Ironside get back into the side? And he was roundly ridiculed. What Liam and Jamie have asked is that, given that we adapted to Smith up front and he was in scoring form, was bringing Big Joe back in actually a mistake at that point? You know, they say he's not at fault, of course, but it's been less effective recently than when Smith was up top. Casper, what's your take on it? I know we've spoken about this every week, I think, now, since we definitely spoke about it last week on the pod before, but, you know, what's your update on it? What do you think? Where's your head at?
Oh, this is unbearable. I just hate the idea that Tom Walker might be right about something. Maybe he looks so happy right now as well. It's making me sick.
It's annoying. It's annoying enough that it's just become a conversation. That's it. Like, even if he's wrong.
Yeah. We can't rewrite history. So what I would say is, as soon as Ironside is fit, I'm definitely getting back in our lineup. It's just so important to the way that we play. I do think it was encouraging. I mean, again, we had some pain when Ironside was first out, obviously not great form. And then we figured out a way to to get some results and to play a bit differently. Albeit I will say we haven't won away. Our last away win was at Lincoln. So that was when Ironside was playing and scored. So I don't know that it's not like we were flying without Ironside and we've put him back in and lost all our momentum. I think we've just had some really hard games again, and it is going to happen. We're going to have these runs of games where we're playing really tough opposition. I think our chance creation, I mean, yes, those are right off, just ignore it, but our ability to create chances is maybe slightly diminished against some of these better teams. We're having to do an awful lot of defending in some of these games. I don't think it's specifically an Ironside problem. I mean, he nearly scored straight away at Wickham. They cleared it off the line. He's the only person who looked like he might actually get us a goal. I would say it looked pretty hopeless up until he came on. So, again, he's probably got enough credit in the bank to suggest it's worth starting, and we can't rewrite history and see what would have happened if we had just stuck with what we had before. But again, obviously not quite safe. So frustrating. There's always going to be this little asterisk around it. But if you assume that we are safe in League One, then we do have an opportunity to try some different stuff. And that might be not starting Ironside automatically. It might be three at the back. Could be giving Lancaster a bit of a run. There's a load of stuff that we can do. But God, I'd love to get another 6 points so we can just say we can all just exhale and just say it with complete confidence and be like, right, now let's try, you know, let's think about next season. Let's start planning. Let's start setting ourselves up and trying a few different things so that we can figure out a few things like how do we win without Joe Ironside? How do we deal with these bigger pitches? How do we deal with wing backs? Like, these are the big questions we're going to need to lean into for next season. So as soon as we can get the points that make us feel properly safe, I think we can properly start to address some of this stuff with hopefully 6, 7, even maybe 8 games to go if things go really well.
We are quite lucky at the moment that we're in a pretty, you know, pretty bad run of form, but the teams below us are crap.
Yeah, like, I don't know that that's luck at the end of the day. I mean, football, there is luck involved, obviously, but when you boil it all down, it's just a set of numbers on a page that determines where you finish. Is, you know, we earned the right to be in this position by being consistently good enough this season. I'm just looking forward to when we could properly get over that finish line. And you never know, a couple of good results could take, you know, get into that Wimbledon game and go get a win there. And you might be saying, I think we've done it. You know, I think we've actually made it.
Hopefully. Please. Well, we're going to Cheltenham on the last game of the season, needing a point to stay up or something.
Oh, Christ.
Oh, God. After another 7-0 drubbing at Sunderland. Anyway, let's move on to the immediate future. Next Saturday, Milton Keynes dons at home. And to preview the game, Tom chatted to the MK1 podcast.
Right, news fans, I'm joined by Liam from the MK1 podcast. First of all, Liam, thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah, no worries. Thanks for having me.
So we obviously face MK Dons on Saturday at the Abbey, coming off the back of a late equaliser against Wigan. I would suggest probably your main rivals, I guess, if, you know, for the remainder of the season in terms of where you'll be hoping to finish. Obviously third in the league at the moment. How's it? You know, how are you kind of feeling about things at the moment?
Yeah, really positive. So unbeaten 11 at the moment, which is the longest unbeaten streak since that promotion season in 2014-2015 to Championship. So yeah, not really too much to complain about. I say, I think you spoke to most people about, you know, where we'd be towards this part of the season if you asked them in August. I don't think many people would say we'll be at this point to where we are in terms of third and, you know, challenging for automatics. I felt Saturday's a bit disappointing. I think the lads just, well, for several reasons, didn't really get going. Which is a real shame. I felt we could have won that game if we had, you know, been at full capacity in terms of our performance. But, you know, we were due a bad performance, and to get something from the game, you know, it's very, very good when you're not at full capacity. And I think that's the element that this Don side has showed the past couple of months, is that, you know, they're not winning by playing pretty football anymore. And I was asked this question the other day about, you know, what's your version of total football? Well, total football to me is, you know, winning games no matter what. And you can play it. You can win it by playing it fancy. You can win it by literally hoofing it upfield to Connor Wickham, for example, and him going again a goal. You know, and I think this Don side has shown that, and people are happy overall, which is good to see.
Yeah, certainly seems like it's been going pretty well recently. I guess points by performances at this stage of the season, I think. Obviously, I guess there's a bit of a strange start to the season with you know, Russell Martin leaving the club and Liam Manning coming in. Seems to have, you know, kind of, you know, carried on pretty much exactly from where you left off. You mentioned maybe you've been changing it up a little bit in terms of the style of play. I know when we played against you guys at Stadium MK earlier in the season, it was very much kind of slick passing football. Really kind of took us apart really for the, you know, for most of that game. What should we expect to see from MK Dons in terms of the approach?
I'd say it'll be pretty similar to how it's been every single away day so far. Like, you know, first 10, 15 minutes, you know, fairly calm on the ball, settling the team down, trying to understand what Cambridge are doing in terms of the game plan and adapting from there. Yeah, you know, we've pretty much seen that most away days this season. And as you can tell by our away form, the best in the league, it's, well, from a pre-Wigan game anyway, it's, you know, it's worked to a certain extent. So yeah, I'd expect a fairly, you know, neutral first 10, 15 minutes, you know, probably keep hold of the ball for quite a bit with how Cambridge are set up, which tends to be with quite a low block and just waiting to press on teams' mistakes and counter-attacks, things like that. And then go from there. I mean, yeah, as you know, the team likes to keep the ball and be in control of the game rather than have other things depend on it. So yeah, I'm sure there'll be elements where, you know, we're passing it around a lot, dominating the ball, trying to create chances. But yeah, overall, it'll be a lot of it resides on how Cambridge set up and started the game, and then we'll see how we go from there.
Yeah, sure. And you know, I guess we would obviously look at the MK Dons team and maybe see a few names. Obviously, one in particular that we recognise in Harry Darling, who'll be coming back to the Abbey for the first time since leaving in January of last year. Who should we kind of be looking out for? Who would you say are the sort of main guys to watch?
Yeah, of course, H has, you know, had a terrific season. Of course, got the equaliser on Saturday. You know, a lot of his friends and family have been coming to games home and away this year, and he's had a terrific season. So, obviously, of course, he's one to watch out for. I'm sure many people will be given a warm welcome on Saturday. Of course, you know, Scott Twine, as the club tweeted out, he's on a double-double now in terms of goals and assists this season. So he's up to 24 now in the year. Incredible player. And I'd be very surprised if he's not at the top end of the Championship at the very least next season, in terms of, you know, the performance he's putting on, how he's, you know, carried a team through games towards festive period and things like that. Outside of that, the whole team's really, really good. It's hard to pick out individuals, you know, when you've got such a high quality of player. You know, things like people like David Kasumi kind of getting the starting 11 at the moment, and he's probably been, you know, since come back from injury, a top five player in the squad. And him and Connor Coventry is in midfield too. You can work really well together. Your Coventry's distributed to the football, likes to keep it calm, whereas Kasumu, you know, pounces on teams' mistakes and has the pace and basically the directness in terms of his ability to dribble and things like that to actually create chances. And people like Mo Issa, Connor Wickham, Troy Parrott can feed off of that. And all three have been scoring goals recently. They've been pretty big ones to get us points. So yeah, the team's really well balanced, and it's got a brilliant head coach at the head of it in Manning, who, you know, understands the players' needs, wants, and can communicate that across a whole bunch of things. And yeah, it's a really well drilled team, which we haven't had in, as I said, a good 5-6 seasons, to be honest.
Yeah, well, I guess for the Hughes fans listening on the commutes into work and commutes back from work and that sort of stuff, they'll be delighted to hear that off the back of a 6-0 thumping away at Sheffield Wednesday, we're facing yet another well-balanced team with quality all over the pitch. Obviously, leads us quite nicely onto Saturday. You know, you just mentioned obviously playing well, looking good on the pitch, you know, getting results in different ways. How do you see the game going? What's your prediction for the afternoon?
Yeah, I'm hoping for a reaction. As I said earlier, I wasn't too pleased with how they played against Wigan. I felt we missed an opportunity, basically. So I'm hoping with a sold out away end, we'll, you know, reward the fans for, you know, it's not a long journey, but it's pretty awkward one going to Cambridge, as we found out earlier in the season, by heading to the Pompey game you guys had. But yeah, it's I'm expecting a win, to put it lightly. I appreciate Cambridge are a pretty good home team. They only lost 4 games all season, but, you know, if you want to be one of the best teams in the league, these are the games you have to win. So yeah, I'm expecting a win, and I'm hoping a convincing one.
Yeah, I guess both sides looking for a reaction from, I guess, respectively, fairly disappointing weekends for maybe different reasons. But yeah, it should be a good game, good atmosphere. As you mentioned, I understand obviously you guys are going to bring quite a decent following. You know, obviously to the Abbey, I should think it'd probably be, you know, the thick end of a sort of 7,000 crowd maybe. So hopefully a good atmosphere, hopefully a good game, and yeah, we'll see how it goes. But once again, thanks for joining us, Liam, and that's from the MK1 podcast.
No worries, thanks for having me.
Rotherham have only conceded 5 goals away from home all season.
Really?
What the fuck?
Jeez, that's crazy.
That's 19 games. Oh my God.
That's insane. So they've conceded like 1 every 4 games away from home, yeah, pretty much.
You know, you said it's 19?
19 games, 24
scored. So we conceded more goals than them in like 60 minutes of football. They have been 19
in the whole season.
They have in how many minutes is 19 times 90?
1,710. Yeah, 1,710 minutes. Oh my goodness me.
I would say Rotherham are better than us.
I think they've really signed up to that philosophy that clean sheets are a platform to build on. That's how it is. Yeah. They've literally got out of the tunnel.
Brilliant. Thank you very much for that. Matt Caswell, in the break, you just informed me of something really quite worrying ahead of MK's trip. If you could repeat that to the audience.
Yeah, MK are second in the away form table with 19 games played, 38 points. They've scored 37 goals. They're the top scorers away from home. But can they do it on a narrow pitch? I think that's the question that we're all asking.
Oh God. I've just
For fuck's sake.
I've just got these memories of that game in November. And then last week, and it's just like, oh God.
This is relentless.
It never stops.
Why can't we just play like Stevenage at home or someone shit like that?
Oh yeah, that's always gone well in the past, Stevenage at home, isn't it?
That was a bad example. Let's just fuck's sake.
So Tom, I'm assuming you're not looking forward to Saturday.
Not really. I don't think it's gonna be as bad as the game in Sheffield.
Just the five.
But they're evidently a very good team who have hit a decent run of form recently. I do think the point about the pitch is one that will come into play a little bit, hopefully. MK, I'm basing this basically on the game up at their place where we got pretty comprehensively drubbed. They're another team that play three at the back. They're going to be looking to play quite expansive football, which just simply isn't really possible on our pitch. There's my positivity out of the way. It'll be good to see Harry Darling coming back. That'll be nice to see.
Eight goals so far this season.
Eight goals. Yeah, prolific. That is actually quite mental for centre back.
It is, yeah.
Not only do they have good, expansive attacking football going forward, they're also a danger from set pieces. So that'll be good because we've been quite shit at defending those over the last few months. I think it'll be a tough game, a tough afternoon. This will be a real, real test of the character of the squad. Not that we necessarily question it as a group, as a pod, I guess as a fan base. It's kind of like out of the frying pan, straight into the fryer, isn't it? This get battered by Sheffield Wednesday, and then you know straight away playing another promotion chasing team. Difficult,
very, very difficult. As you said, it is just a relentless division. And I think I speak for most United fans where I would snap your hand off for a point and move on. But you know, crazier things have happened. Let's move on to some. Really positive news that's come out this week. And Casper, I'll come to you first. Doors or wheels?
Oh no, we're not doing this again, are we? I actually ran this earlier with the wife. I was like, I'm intrigued to see what she says. And lots of further questions came up, like, is the lid of a bin, does that count as a door?
That's a lid, surely.
Yeah, but surely a lid is a door. One man's lid is another man's door. No, anyway, I mean,
true.
It's been a hell of a day in the house, for sure.
I think Tom nailed it yesterday. Advent calendars, they've got 25 doors on them.
Oh shit! Yeah, wow.
Each.
Think about that. Each. Think about how many there are in shops.
But then also suitcases.
Yeah, but they've also got doors on, haven't they? That's a door. Isn't
is
it?
That a door?
That's a door.
You can't like.
I'm just opening the door to my suitcase, getting a t-shirt out, and then I'll close the door back up.
Yeah, like personally, I'm a doors man, but that's a stretch. That's a real stretch.
You know, like a DVD case, that's a door. I'm joking. I mean, it is doors anyway. No, of course, I am talking about Cambridge United buying back the Abbey Stadium. News that came out of nowhere. Casper, I'll come to you because obviously you're of a different vintage to me and Thomas, and you'll remember... We spent a lot of the train journey yesterday reminiscing, well, not reminiscing, being shown old photos of yourself back in 2003, 2004 sort of era, and a brilliant ones of Jordan, which we'll put up on social media later. But in all seriousness, how brilliant news is this for the club, given, you know, everything that happened, what, nearly 20 years ago now?
Yeah, it's 18 years ago. The photos are obviously brilliant. Quite a lot of protesting way back when. Was a really big deal, obviously, and has always been a big deal. And for us as a club, has always been a millstone around our neck for the last two decades is not owning the freehold of the ground. There's no point going over all the old history. It's an entire pod of its own. That sort of chapter of history was just frankly bizarre. And we're extremely lucky to have, I would say, the setup that we have now, from top to bottom, the club where it is now compared to where it was 18 years ago is, it's just out of this world, to be honest. It's complete, it's impossible almost to compare. It's terrific news. I don't want to sound boring, but I'm looking forward to when the deal is actually done. It's all theoretical at the moment. I'm sure that there's a lot of good faith around, and Grosvenor seem to be like a really great partner for the club. So I do think there won't be any issues. And it's just a seriously strong development for us. So it's maybe a bit of a cliche, but it doesn't really matter what we've done on the pitch. Even if we've beaten Sheffield Wednesday, Hillsborough, Ipswich at Portland Road, Sunderland with Akambi and Core linking up as we've prophesized will happen. None of that would be as important as us getting the freehold to the ground back. And what it facilitates for us, particularly when it was paired with the statement from Paul Barry about his desire to keep us at the Abbey on the site. I won't lie, I was probably moved. I was quite emotional when the news came through. I'd also just been on a camel ride in the desert in Dubai. So there's a lot of stuff happening at the time, which, you know, you could describe as quite odd.
For a second, I forgot you'd been in Dubai for a second. I thought, they're doing camel rides in Epsom now, are they?
Yeah, that's course, it, mate. That's it. That's it. Oh, God. It's better than traveling with wheels, I would say. Yeah. It furthers my agenda towards there being more doors.
Have camels got doors?
Well, I mean, again,
is their mouth a door?
The mouth is a door, depending on your perspective. So, terrific news, right? Just brilliant news. Amazing. for the club and for all of us. And, it gives you a little bit of hope that actually maybe one day we could see the Abbey kind of grow and change and evolve and become something we all think that is possible without having to lose the character, and please keep the floodlights. Just terrific news.
You get the feeling that this is sort of like a first step for Paul Barry, that I feel like whatever's happening behind the scenes now, it's all geared towards making those changes and, you know, modernizing it as a stadium, but keeping the character and the history and the location more than anything. Because I don't know about you guys, but well, we spoke about it when we were at Oxford the other week, who are, you know, a brilliant, proud football club, but the Kassam is just, it's a really, I'd hate to have to, you know, to play there every week. It's so far out of town, and it's just that nightmare sort of soulless bowl, you know, in inverted commas, just like identikit stadiums that you get that are always in the middle of nowhere. And I was just convinced that that's what would happen to us. So just the sort of emotional argument for staying on that patch of land, Coldham's Common, is brilliant. It's brilliant news. Caswell, just very, very quickly, like there'll be people listening who probably don't remember or, you know, weren't around at that time. Do you want to sort of give like a very brief sort of history of what happened in that time with Harwood and Howard and
oh, Jesus.
Just very briefly, like you're even just your memory.
Brief test. Tweet length summary. Well, forgive me if I get the dates wrong. Or get them mixed up, because it is a sequence of events. I'm trying to think where to start. 2001, ITV Digital. So club receives massive windfall of money, as did all the other clubs in the Football League. Unwisely, lots of other clubs did this. We spent all the money. We spaffed it all. We had really high wages and outrageous signings. People like Lionel Perez, Tom Cowan, people who were not great. To be honest, didn't turn out to be great signings, but were definitely really expensive. The ITV Digital whole thing collapsed. We were left in a really desperate situation. So, I mean, it's easy to rewrite history and see Gary Harvard and John Howard as these two like evil dictators. Like they get a pretty bad rep. We didn't manage the money in the whole ITV Digital thing very well, but lots of other clubs also made the same mistake. And that was a little bit out of our control. The way we probably handled the situation then wasn't good. That sent us into a bit of a tailspin, I would say. And some really negative stuff happened. So I think a lot of the mistakes around communication and PR, to be honest. So I think Gary Harwood came out and said something on the lines of, we will not have to sell any players to survive this like sticky period we're in. And then I think it was Boxing Day, they sold Dave Kitson and announced it. And it was proper just, fucking hell, why has this happened to us? This is around the time of Bridge the Gap. Fans raising 100K to save the club. Huge amount of effort going in from the fan base. And to be honest, CFU's kind of finest hour was around that time. They did a huge amount of stuff to bail the club out. anyway, the situation just gets worse and worse and worse. And then, unfortunately, we were left with very few options, it seems. So the club, I believe, would have gone into liquidation if we hadn't sold the ground. So it's important to remember that even though it's possibly through not the best sequence of events, I don't think we actually had options when we sold the ground. I think we'd run out of levers to pull. We weren't able to get any more loans. We were just simply completely tapped out. And it was the only asset, it was the only resource we had left. And so it had to go, unfortunately. But it was a deeply, really hard time where it wasn't clear whether the club was going to continue. We're suddenly having to pay all this rent. We don't have any money, but we're having to pay rent. Just a really grim chapter. And obviously, what often happens in that situation to lots of football clubs is that the financial decline is often followed by decline on the pitch. And that's exactly what happened as well. And that's pretty much the sequence of events, sort of a 4-year period where we fell from what was then Div 2 to Div 3, and then obviously fell out of the Football League. So a pretty awful chapter. And to be honest, when Joe Ironside bags up at Newcastle away, or you see the players running out at Hillsborough, it's really important to remember exactly what everyone has been through at this club in the last sort of 20 or 30 years, really. To go from where we were and from all the danger that was around existentially to the club to being in the situation we are now. That's why it means so much, right? That's why you get the goosebumps. That's why everyone gets so excited about this stuff. It's because, you know, we've had a lot of setbacks and we've had to deal with a lot. So I am hugely grateful to Paul Berry, the two American investors as well, and for everyone around the club for facilitating this and making this happen is a dream come true.
Great from Granddad's corner there. We'll be back for more historical info with Tom. Here's one for you, just on the ground. What it brought into sort of stark sort of clarity for me was like how lucky we are to have an owner who is a Cambridge United fan. Like, this means as much to him as it does for anyone, right?
Yeah, like we've praised, and rightly so, praised the players, the manager, pretty much everyone connected with the football side of this club to high heavens over the past 18, 24 months. And, you know, rightly so, promotion, stabilising in League One, wins at Newcastle, etc., etc., etc. We probably haven't talked about Paul Berry anywhere near as much as we should have done, to be honest. We're just phenomenally lucky to have a man like that who's, you know, there for the club when it's needed. There's so many times where his ability or his commitment to sort of covering losses or whatever it might be has quite literally saved this football club from going out of business. I think it's fair to say that if Paul Berry wasn't connected to Cambridge United anyway, there probably wouldn't be a Cambridge United, particularly in some of those sort of grim conference era days when like the attendances, like you're talking like below 2,000, like the club's not making any money and it's like hemorrhaging money on wages. And like, it's just like, it's basically just a bit of a shit show financially. And it's not just like his commitment to do that, but like he's probably investing money in the club that like any sort of rational thinking businessman would just pull out and would just be like, no, like there's a line and we're kind of crossing it now. So, you know, you can add to his commitment to funding the club, like the fact that he's a fan as well. That's like clearly significantly important. I mean, we're obviously recording this pod, you know, on the back of, you know, clearly quite high profile discussions across the national media about ownership of football clubs at the top level. And I've said it to people that I know that support Premier League clubs and stuff like that. Like, I remember like Newcastle got bought by the Saudis. I was like, oh, brilliant, they're going to have access to billions of pounds worth of funds and all that sort of stuff. And I just think, like, honestly, that wouldn't interest me. It genuinely wouldn't interest me to have guys like that coming in buying the club who've got no connection to it. I mean, you know, we can talk about the sort of moral implications of having people like that running the football club on, you know, another time. But I guess the argument is that would you rather have more money and someone who doesn't really care about the immediate future or the, certainly the longer term future of the football club, or would you rather have someone like Paul Berry and all right, like on the pitch, there might be a limit to how much we can progress, because clearly, like, we've seen a stark example up at Hillsborough of the difference in resources between teams at the top end of even this division and obviously ourselves. But like, what you know is that you've got a fan who would just basically do anything for the football club. And that's something that you can't replicate with just like a pit of money, because at some point they'll lose interest or that money will run and you end up with a sort of spiral that Casper just talked about there. And that's clearly not something that we want to happen. I mean, to be honest, that sort of saga, that's probably my first memories really of going to Cambridge. So I started off well.
This is for me. Perfect.
Yeah. First season ticket I had was 2004-05 administration relegation out of the Football League.
And people are tweeting about me being a precursor to put bad stuff happening.
Yeah. And I like, obviously, I was instantly hooked at that point. But like, it's just so, it's so strange, like how it's just come like completely full circle. Like, I'm probably gone a little bit further. Like, started, you know, with, you know, everything surrounding the ground, falling out of League One, eventually falling out of League Two. Looked like at one point we might fall out of the conference as well, let's not forget. And to be able to like build the club back up to a point where we're competing in the third tier, which I think is a good level for us to be at in terms of the football side. But to be looking at a deal to actually buy the ground back, and you would guess that from that, looking to develop it in the future, is something that I think for a lot of us, particularly people that were going regularly throughout the conference days, like it was just pie in the sky. Like it was madness to think that you know that could or would ever happen. And there's a lot of people along the way who, you know, deserve thanks for that. But I think Paul Barry is the one that head and shoulders is above anyone else. Probably has contributed to the football club. Maybe you could argue, and this might be a little bit reactive to, you know, pretty significant news and, you know, getting the ground back. But I think you could argue he's maybe the most important person in Cambridge United's history in that respect.
Do you know the amount of money that he's put into the club, just heart overhead, like you said, it's constantly kept us afloat. It would be hard to, because you've got to think about what is a football club, right? And there might not be a football club without him. And that whole sort of, do you know how like football fans, we're like incredibly emotional people, right? We like attach significance to moments and to players and to people that I think normal people just don't do, especially people that like you don't know personally, if you know what I mean. And then to have all that and it be on this patch of land, which at the end of the day is just a football stadium in Cambridge, but it means so much. And without Paul Barry, someone who has been going for what, 45 years to the Abbey, I don't think it would ever have happened. And I don't think anyone was expecting it to happen. Maybe I'm just speaking for myself there, but when that news came out, I was like that it caught me completely blindsided. But yeah, it's seriously exciting to think of the future. And the potential, just need to buy the land behind the NRE now and create like a sort of massive, sort of like Mestalla style stand there. I'm thinking like it's a good 25,000 seater terrace or something like that.
So I think the freehold includes the car wash,
the car park apparently.
The car park, but not the car wash.
Sorry,
thrifty. Yeah, you know the car wash behind the NRE.
Car hire.
Can't be bothered. Too many wheels, not enough doors for me.
Yeah. It's a good point. But there's a few gates in there as well, though. So maybe. And all of those cars, what have they all got as well?
They do have doors.
Five of them.
Well,
a boat's a door.
What about the fuel cap? Right, let's stop this.
Yeah.
It's a little door, isn't it? A
tiny little door. The little glove box, door. Anyway, what brilliant, you know, one of the most significant things that's happened in Cambridge United's like history. We're just going to top it off with a bit of doors and wheels chat. Anyway, let's wrap that up for this week. I'm sure there'll be more updates to come in the next few months on that, and we'll dive into that as and when. Tom, just as a goodbye, we've had one last question from Matt Dean, which is, will you be backing a single winner at Cheltenham on Tuesday?
Let's extend that to the whole festival. Probably not.
Casper, are you going to be back in any camels at Epsom or Dubai this week?
No.
It could be a door to a whole new world. Anyway.